Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Madison, Wisconsin is Katie Ignatowski. Katie, until recently, served as Chief Compliance Officer for the University of Wisconsin. And I spotted an article she wrote for Compliance and Ethics Professional magazine entitled, Do You Have the Right Tools to Meet Risks Head On? And it intrigued me. Katie, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, let's talk about your article. You make the point that there are two approaches, generally speaking, to compliance programs, and I want to talk about each of them. The first is one that is risk-based. Can you explain what that means in practice?
Yes, absolutely. And just taking a step back real briefly, I'll let the audience know, when I started as Chief Compliance Officer for the University of Wisconsin system, I was the first person in that role. So working on building a program from the ground up, I thought it was best to start in an information gathering posture. So I really called around to other compliance officers at large university systems across the country just to ask the question, how do you view compliance and how is your program set up? And what I noticed is two kind of general approaches. And again, you mentioned the first one I would call is generally a risk-based approach. A risk-based approach means providing experts that know how to comply with a specific high-risk compliance area. So really nearly every organization is doing this, I would say. If you are subject to regulatory mandates from the federal government, state government, other oversight bodies, you likely have people within your organization that know how to comply with those regulations. When I started at the UW system, we have 13 universities. Each of our universities had a Title IX coordinator. That's a requirement of federal law, and everyone knows it's pretty important. But this was 2019, and we know that the federal government would soon be issuing new regulations and that it would take significant effort on our part to come into compliance. So at the System Compliance Office, we said, okay, Title IX is a high-risk area. We think it's a really important area. It pertains to sexual harassment and sexual assault on our campuses. We want our students to feel safe and to be doing everything we can in the prevention and training aspect. So what we did is we brought in a Title IX expert within the System Compliance Office as someone who could provide support and guidance to the Title IX coordinators on the campuses to say, here's what it looks like to comply. This person became a resource as the new federal regulations came down to help explain what those regulations would look like in practice. So she walked us through, you know, here's what a hearing will look like. If we have a complaint that's filed that ends up in hearing, here's how we're gonna navigate the different evidentiary issues that come up. Here's what the training should look like. It's one thing to have laws on the books and policies, but it's another thing to have training that makes sense and is easy to digest for those who need to understand it. So, you know, she built up training, helped draft our policies, helped rewrite our laws. In our case, we actually had to work with the legislature to get into our laws. And so this is really what I would say a high risk area, one that we knew was high risk and that needed some focused attention. And it made sense for the compliance office to take that on and to provide that targeted expertise. I will just note that compliance officers who take this approach do sometimes end up with a grab bag of compliance functions of sort. And this happened to me, right? There can be a new report or disclosure that's required by a law. And you may look around your campus or your organization and say, well, I don't know that we really have another person or business unit that really makes sense to take this work on. So you do it, compliance office. And that's fine. I actually think it's typically perfectly appropriate if there isn't another area that makes sense for the compliance office to take on sort of those orphan compliance functions, if you will. I would just note that the more a compliance office gets, you know, in the weeds or bogged down with providing expertise on specific targeted compliance areas, the less you may have space that's necessary to really take a step back and do some of the things that we'll talk about a little later in our conversation, like building the structures that are necessary to sustain compliance over the long term.
And it's a good point you make that every compliance program has to set limits of what it can and can't address. Now, the second approach you came across is what you described as more of a second line of defense model. What does that look like by comparison?
Sure. So the three lines of defense is a concept that comes from the Institute for Internal Auditors. The idea here is that you have your first line of defense, which is management. These are the people that are typically, you know, interacting with your customers, they're producing your products, and the people that are supervising them. In the university context, it's typically those who are interfacing with students. It's our faculty, our administrators, you know, the people who collect tuition, maybe provide counseling services, oversee our facilities, et cetera. And on the other end, you have your third line, which is typically an independent audit function. It's important that that function is truly independent so that it can provide assurance necessary to your governing board or your external bodies without any potential for undue influence. In the middle of those two, you have the second line, which is typically your risk and your compliance function. What the second line does is it provides support to the first line functions. So I like to picture this almost like an umbrella that makes connections amongst the various units. So let's say, for example, you had a recent audit on data privacy, and the audit pointed out the current business processes and where some gaps may be, and it provided some recommendations. You look around your organization, and you don't see one obvious owner for this obligation, but rather you see many different people who have a role in it. Your information security officer needs to make sure that you have security systems that adequately protect confidential information. The people who manage, in our case, student information need to be aware of FERPA requirements and understand who has access to that information and how it's handled. The people in your health clinics need to understand HIPAA. So you have all these different players. The compliance team can come in and convene a working group of all of these players to take a comprehensive view of the risk. So the compliance officer says, okay, first, what are the laws and standards that are out there? What policies do we have that speak to those requirements? And do those policies heighten the bar over and above regulatory requirements? Next, we want to ask, how are we educating, training, and communicating on those requirements? And then we want to say, how are we monitoring to make sure that our requirements are being followed? And if they're not being followed, do people report that? Do they, A, know how to report that? And B, do they feel comfortable knowing that their complaints will be taken seriously? And that they do not have to fear retaliation. It's really important that if people come forward, they don't fear that they will be retaliated against for coming forward with a complaint or for participating in an investigation.
Yeah.
The other way that, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, you know, and if you're in a situation where people fear retaliation, you're really at a non-starter place. I mean, if it gets to the point where they're paralyzed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is where culture really comes into play. If you're starting as a new compliance officer, I think you'll pretty quickly understand whether or not you're operating in an organization that really values compliance as part of the culture and encourages acting with integrity in all things, or if it's an organization that sees it more as a check the box approach, if you will, where, you know, we want to make sure we're not breaking the law. So we do this minimum standard and then we move on. And that's really going to be determinative to how well you are received within the organization, whether you're seen as a partner who comes alongside the leadership team and helps make decisions in the right way and aligns with the mission, vision and values of the organization, or whether you're seen as someone who may be more of an impediment to the work. And I think the latter is unfortunate.
Oh, most definitely.
So the other way compliance can function as a second line is in creating structures to help identify what the highest compliance risks are to the organization so that you can focus efforts and resources accordingly. So this might look like conducting a compliance risk assessment where you group categories of compliance obligations and then you work with those who are responsible for doing the complying to drill down on what risk is present there. For example, you might want to work alongside your cybersecurity team to fully understand what happens if we don't have proper safety features in place, or if we fail to notify customers of a privacy breach? Using my Title IX example, you may want to work with your Title IX coordinator to understand the risks of failing to properly investigate allegations of sexual harassment or sexual assault. If you have areas that maybe don't have someone you can talk to, you may need to do a little independent research. For example, if you're an organization that handles money, and you don't have maybe a chief ethics officer, you'll want to understand what are the ethics requirements and what internal controls do we have to make sure that, you know, it's not easy to get away with fraud or embezzlement. So I always say it's not my job to ensure compliance. It's my job as a compliance officer to build a compliance program and it's the first line's role or management's role to ensure compliance. So these are decisions that are ultimately made by the president or CEO or governing board of an organization. What I can do is I can design a system that provides them with the best information on the risk landscape to the organization and work with them to assess risk tolerance in each area. So the compliance officer is responsible for designing the program and providing information. Management is responsible for engaging with that program and dedicating resources to ensure compliance.
So finally, how should a compliance officer, especially when about to design a new program, sort of someone who was in, you know, your shoes back a few years ago, know which approach makes the most sense for his or her organization?
Sure. So I would suggest really looking at what they have in place starting out. If this organization has a sense of some known high-risk compliance areas that need some immediate attention, I would start there. For example, if you're starting at a university and you don't have a Title IX coordinator, or you don't have good policies or protocols in place to respond to allegations of sexual harassment or sexual assault, you don't have to look much farther than the national headlines to know that that's an area that's really important and poses significant risk to your organization. So if that's the case, I would start by addressing those high-risk areas and providing some needed expertise and support to make sure that you can get into compliance in a known high-risk compliance area. If you don't have that information, then I would suggest starting with something like a compliance risk assessment. A compliance risk assessment, for example, would give you an opportunity to come alongside the various compliance experts within your organization and get to know their work on a day-to-day basis. And it would also help you provide the information on the full risk landscape so that you can look at what are all of the risks facing our organization and how do we want to align our resources accordingly so that we're not spending, you know, a majority of our time on an area that really doesn't pose all that risk, while neglecting an area that maybe does pose significant risk. So it really depends on where you start. I think for us, it worked really well to have a hybrid approach where we embraced both and we were able to target high-risk areas while also building up the structures that allowed us to have a comprehensive view of the risk landscape and making sure that we were always aware of what risks may be just around the corner or on the horizon so that we weren't, you know, caught off guard by a new policy or a new regulation at the federal, state, or other regulatory level.
Well, and ongoing vigilance, even as you're going through a risk assessment, is important to see what else may be popping up right around the corner, in addition to what you know are the risks that you face. Well, Katie, thank you so much for sharing those insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.